This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows, and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA. With your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
This is Mason Vera Payne, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Movies, television shows, and even music are streamed. So what's stopping video games from heading down a similar path? Executive editor at EGMNow.com, Molly Patterson, is going to join me to speak about how close video games are to being streamed right now. Thanks for joining me, Molly.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. How'd you get into video games?
So I've actually been into video games for my entire life, so there's no real one singular point of me getting into it. But I think kind of the step that got me to where I am today was when I was in high school, I really became a fan of video game magazines. And so I actually started making my own kind of personal fanzines, like going to Kinko's and copying them and giving them to friends and things like that. And that got me the chance to work for actual magazines, which then kind of opened my fandom up to having a lot more experiences and exposure to the industry and developers and things like that.
That is so cute. You cut up the magazines. It was like, everybody, you got to read this. I love that. That is so cute. I had a friend who would cut up the magazines, but it was for NSYNC. And,
Oh, yeah.
I wish she had done the video games. I would have appreciated that a little bit more.
Yeah, and then I kind of moved on from that to actually, like, making my own,
which
was a lot of fun. But I didn't have very many people reading them, but then, you know, I got the chance to go big time. And then people all around the world were reading my stuff, which was kind of crazy when it first started happening.
I bet it was. I'm hoping you know a little bit more about this, because I heard that Sony and Microsoft, they purchase small companies that specialize in like streaming video games. Do you think that streaming, that type of streaming of games is going to be the future?
That's actually a question that's been going around for a handful of years now, is where is the video game industry going to go in terms of streaming? Because, you know, of course, we've seen other industries such as music and cinema, where these services have come up and provided this secondary option that has become very popular very quickly. On the gaming side, there's been a complication in that you're not just sitting there and passively listening to something or watching something. You're actually having to interact with it. And the technological hurdles on that are that, you know, a signal has to be sent to you, and then you have to send signals back. You know, the gameplay comes to you, you send your controller inputs back to it. So while it's been something that companies have been taking baby steps in, there's been some reason to not be able to go as fast as music and movies, because especially here in America, we just don't have the infrastructure in terms of things like super high-speed bandwidth for our internet connections. And so I think it's something that is going to be the future, whether we like that or not, but it's not going to come quite as quickly as it has with our movies and music.
Now, I can't help but think of Sega Channel, and there was another one, and I can't, it's on the tip of my tongue and I can't remember it, but Sega Channel, I think everybody can remember. They kind of did that streaming thing where you paid for it with your cable, I think you got a little box, and then you were able to play their whole library on your television.
So I thought you mentioned that because I was around and I was a super hardcore Genesis person in that era. Yeah, they worked with your cable companies, and you got this special cartridge that would connect to your actual cable line, and then there was a rotating selection of games. So this is something that was actually tried, like you're saying, you know, many, many, many years ago. The same thing actually happened with VR is back in the Genesis era, and even the Atari Jaguar days, companies were trying to do VR back then as well. But these kind of technologies weren't in the place yet where they could really go super mass market.
But when it comes to streaming games, I can't help but think of ownership. For the longest time, when it comes to publishers, they don't like that we resell our games. We buy them and then we resell them to somewhere else like GameStop, and back then it was Funko Land. And they tried their hardest to make sure that we can't get our money back. So I can't help but feel as if this is going to be more beneficial for a company than for us.
definitely one of the big hurdles, and that's one of the concerns that I have with movies and music. There's kind of sometimes people don't have as much of an attachment to those things, and there's so many other different options for getting your music or getting your movie. But with video games, we're seeing more and more that are coming out where there's, like, it's a digital-only game, for example. You know, last generation, there was the game Scott Pilgrim on the PS3 and Xbox 360 that you literally just can't buy anymore. And one of the concerns is that when things move more and more to the streaming side, companies are going to have that tighter control over your games, what you can play, when you can play them. And for someone like me, you know, I'm kind of old-fashioned in I love having my CDs available to me whenever I want to listen to them. I don't like streaming services because the music I like can always be taken away. And so the question is going to be, what promises do we have as consumers that our games won't be taken away? And a different side to this question that maybe you're not thinking about is, for example, in Japan currently, the Nintendo Switch has two games that you can only play through streaming. And that is Phantasy Star Online 2 and Resident Evil 7. Of course, for us, Resident Evil 7 for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, that came out in physical copies and digital downloads and things like that. But on the Switch in Japan, the only way to play it is as a streamed game. So if you want to keep that game at any kind of future point, there might be no option to do so. And they're actually charging you money per rental period to play it. So it's not like you buy the game once and then you have it and you can always play it. What they're actually doing is charging, I think it was about $18 or so for 180 days. So at that point, you are not even just paying for a rental service. You are paying to rent one singular game that then just goes away at the end of that period.
Wow, that's crazy. I couldn't imagine doing that. You know, I had an experience. Afro Samurai 2 was a horrible game. Everybody said it was a horrible game. I knew it was a horrible game, but I had gotten a downloadable game of it. So, you know, okay, whatever. They actually took it back and refunded me the money. And I'm not upset that they took the game. It was a crappy game. But I don't like that they took it. I paid for it regardless. That was my crappy game. They didn't even ask. They just took. And that's what I don't like about the idea of just going straight digital, straight streaming, because there is no ownership. They can take it back and say, hey, you got your money. No harm, no foul. And that's not true. Maybe I'd wanted that game. They never gave me permission. And Amazon does that too. When a book gets on a banned list, and even if you bought it, if your country says, hey, that's on the banned list, it can't be in that country, they'll take the book off of your Kindle and then refund you the money. I don't like that either. That's why I really want physical copies. And I don't like that they're going to take that away.
It's scary in that regard because you're right. Like, you know, I look at my shelves and I've got all these games from like PlayStation 2, PlayStation 1, even as far as NES era. And I know those games are going to be there if I ever want to play them again, you know. But like you're saying, they can take those games away, or they can even make changes that we maybe don't agree with. A good example of this is recently Grand Theft Auto 4 had an update done to it where it actually removed some of the music that had been in the game previously. And I believe the situation was that if you still had your copy at that point, then you would still have all the music intact, but somebody coming later or somebody maybe even having to re-download it later might now have a copy of that game that isn't the same as it was on launch day. And I know we expect that in terms of patches and updates and fixes and all those kinds of things, but there's also those kinds of situations as well where content can actually be removed or taken away or changed in a game where we have no choice over that, where we would, if it's on a cartridge and it's in our house and they would have to, you know, physically come in and take it from us in order to do that.
Yeah, I was playing Castlevania Dracula's Curse for the NES, and my friend was like, how come it lags so much? You should have just, you know, played it on your computer, streamed it somehow. I was like, no. It's not authentic. And I explained to her that because when it comes to the NES, if it can only have about two enemies on the screen at the time, because then it will start lagging and it doesn't like it so much. If you try playing it on the computer, you may end up getting more spawns only because the computer can handle it. And obviously that game's going to be a little bit better because it's going to be like HD. It's just a file. So you're right. You lose that authenticity when you change it. And not saying it's about patches, because sometimes patches will fix a game. I'm saying like you change the game entirely by taking out those little things. And to me, you lose the how good the game really was.
It's a terrifying situation for some of us who care, but I don't know, it's unfortunate, but the reality is some people don't care, and the future of streaming could be more important to them than that collectability or that ability to archive games. So it might end up kind of being a battle between two different sides, you know, to make it a little more dramatic, between the people who do want streaming and want us to go to that future, with the danger of maybe everything going that direction, versus those of us who kind of, you know, feel pry our games from our cold dead hands kind of thing.
That's so true. I've always been curious about this, and I'd love to hear your take on it. A lot of times games are going to be $59.99, right? Physical copy or digital download. And I've always had a gripe with that. Why is a digital download is $59.99? It's not like I'm paying for the plastic or the shipping or any of the hands that it went through. Shouldn't it be like $10 less?
Yeah, the argument comes in because, you know, you definitely have a situation where companies like Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo take their cut, which is typically, I think, 30% of the price. So, you know, you do have that going on. But in the end, the company is making more money off the digital download. And it is kind of an argument, right? Is do we want to support that because we think developers really deserve to get more than money, because game, you know, development at this point is really a super expensive process? Or is it the argument of it's not really fair to us consumers, because I can go to a store, I can pay the exact same amount of money for a physical copy. Why is the price the same? And physical copies tend to drop in price a lot quicker and stay at those lower prices versus digital downloads, where you don't typically see those kind of clearance prices ever come in because there's no direct inventory to clearance. You know, it is tough. There is an argument, and that's an argument that I definitely made for a long time when the Switch first started happening. When you kind of work with, you know, talk to developers and meet them and get to know them, there is a little bit of going on their side as well that you end up finding yourself doing, in that of all the things we can argue about, I would rather argue over, say, streaming or DLC or microtransactions, and not so much this, because I'm okay with more of that money going to them, you know, in the first place. But it is a very valid argument, you know, because we are not getting anything physically. And like we've said, they can take that game away or change that game at any moment, you know. So we're losing that kind of promise of having the game that we bought day one, but paying the same price for it.
Now, I know I've been bashing online services a lot in this conversation, but I am excited about Nintendo Switch Online. Do you have any information about how that paid services is going to be?
Sure. You know, we know a few things, and first thing that we know, of course, is the price. And the service is going to launch in late September. Unfortunately, we don't know much more at this point other than late September. But the pricing is going to work in, you know, 1 month it's going to be for $3.99. 3 months will be $7.99. Or a full year will be $19.99, you know, which is considerably cheaper than the options you have for Xbox Live and PlayStation Plus. But there will also be a family option that people can go with, where if you instead pay $34.99 per year, you'll have up to 8 users then be able to use the Nintendo online services. The big question with that, of course, is, you know, what does that mean? Because the promise seems to be right now that those 8 users can all use the service without having to be on the exact same Nintendo Switch. That seems to then open up some abuse, if you would, you know, where you and 7 friends could all pay for the family plan and all have Nintendo Online for a much cheaper cost. So I think there's some things we don't know yet in terms of how exactly that's going to work out if you go with the family plan versus the individual plan. And then from there, you know, if you'd like me to get into them, there are kind of 5 different areas that Nintendo Online is going to focus on, each of which is promising different kinds of offers or services for players.
Ooh, go into it. I want to hear this.
First would be online play, of course. You know, right now, if you're on your Nintendo Switch and you want to play online and say Mario Kart 8 Deluxe or Splatoon 2 or Mario Tennis Aces, that's all free currently. When Nintendo Online becomes active in late September, that's going to change. And you're not going to be able to play online unless you are subscribing to the service. It's going to become very much like Xbox Live and PS Plus. There may be a few kind of outlier games, like MMOs or free-to-play games, for example, that have agreements where they don't require that, but most of the games are going to. The next thing that subscribers will get will be NES games. And what Nintendo is doing is bringing back a selection of their classic NES titles, but they're making this very big change in that they will be playable online, some of these for the first time ever. So they'll be the original NES games, like you played them on the NES, but they will be online playable if they have any kind of multiplayer component. Now, the games we currently know of so far are going to be soccer, tennis, Donkey Kong, the original Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers, Balloon Fight, Ice Climber, Dr. Mario, The Legend of Zelda, and Super Mario Brothers 3. Nintendo is promising to have around 20 titles at launch, and that title selection is going to rotate. I'm not sure if it's actually month by month or if they're going to have a different kind of scheduling for that. You are supposedly going to be able to keep any of the NES games you've downloaded while you are subscribed to the service. So it will hopefully not be a kind of Netflix situation where you could go to play Donkey Kong and then suddenly find out it's gone. As long as you have downloaded it, I'm saying you will still be able to play it. But of course, we also don't know if that would still be the case if you stopped subscribing or not. And then they're going to rotate, you know, in and out new titles, and they haven't announced what additional ones they might have. The third major feature they're going to offer is saved data cloud backup. Now, up until now, there has been an issue where if something happened to your Nintendo Switch, there has been absolutely no way to get your saved data off. And so with this option, you'll be able to upload your saves to the cloud, know that they're there safe, and then in case anything happens to your Switch or if you should buy a new one, whatever else, it'll be very easy to transfer your saves over. And then the last two things are we don't know much about yet, or we don't know much about the changes that will be coming. It's the Nintendo Switch Online app, which already exists, but we don't know too much about what might change in terms of that app itself. And then Nintendo is promising that subscribers will receive special offers, which could be discounts on digital games or, you know, special maybe like wallpapers for your phone and things like that. They haven't said what it's going to be, but no doubt going to be something similar to what companies like Sony and Microsoft do with their own services.
So will you be able to have your 3DS, Wii, or even your Wii U on the streaming service, or they're not going to have that available for it?
No, the only thing that's going to be on the new Nintendo Online service is going to be Nintendo Switch. 3DS currently has free online. That's going to stay just the way it is. The Wii U currently has free online. That's going to stay just the way it is. So there aren't going to be any changes in terms of the systems you already have out of Switch, but the Switch is going to be interesting because this is one of the first times I can think of when a system has gone from having free online to paid online. Usually it's either free the entire life of the system, like the PlayStation 3 was, or it's there from the beginning, like the Xbox consoles have been. So it's going to be interesting to see, but as of now, all these benefits and features and everything are only in regards to the Switch.
What kind of games can we expect to come out in September? Anything that's going to wow us?
I looked at the list, and I think kind of the biggest titles that we have coming up, Spider-Man, of course. You know, Spider-Man is one of the biggest PlayStation 4 exclusives coming out this year. The company behind it is Insomniac Games, which has done previous titles like Spyro the Dragon, Ratchet and Clank, and Sunset Overdrive. That game, Sunset Overdrive, is really interesting. It was an Xbox One exclusive title, but it really showed the developer doing some new and interesting things with traversal in a game. So Spider-Man is kind of building on that because you have all of these special movements that he can do, you know, swinging through the city, walking on walls, these kind of acrobatic attack moves. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what Insomniac Games has done with not only the character, but that world and that mythos, because we really haven't had a good Spider-Man game for a long time. And this one is looking absolutely fantastic and is already getting huge amounts of pre-orders. That's definitely going to be the biggest title in September, I think. But, you know, not far after that, on September 14th, we have Shadow of the Tomb Raider, which is the third chapter in Lara Croft's new rebirth arc that she started back in 2013 with the Tomb Raider reboot. The original game was about Laura kind of being thrown into a situation and having to survive. The second game was Laura kind of dealing with the aftermath of that survival and what it means for her as a person. But what's interesting about Shadow of the Tomb Raider is that we're now kind of seeing a Lara Croft that is more skilled, more talented, more resourceful. She knows more what she's doing. But she also ends up making a very costly mistake that kind of almost puts her in question of, does she really know what she's doing and is she really in control? So what I've played of Shadow of the Tomb Raider so far has been a lot of fun because it asks some interesting questions that I think we haven't asked about Laura up to this point. And it puts her in some situations where the player almost has to decide, is she doing the right thing or is she doing the wrong thing? And then just a few more of the titles that are coming out. You know, of course, we have the gigantic Japanese RPG Dragon Quest XI coming out on September 4th, which continues the Dragon Quest series. It's been, from memory, 30-some years the series has been out. You know, it's kind of the rival to Final Fantasy that went back and forth, you know, for many, many years. Very colorful, a lot of fun, lighthearted, but with a few serious elements to it, and very expansive world and adventure to go on to. And then finally, I think the last big one that we're going to see in September is Destiny 2 Forsaken, which is the new expansion for Destiny 2 that brings new locations, new enemies, new gameplay types, new endgame content, of course, a lot of brand new armor and weapons and things like that. So if you're somebody who's either kind of played the current Destiny 2 to death, or if you're looking for a spot to jump in, both those kind of players will have a nice amount of content to kind of go to when the game comes out.
Well, Molly, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Sure. So I work for EGM, which is URL is EGMnow.com. And every single day on there, we are doing news and features and reviews and previews and interviews and all that fun kind of stuff. So you can check out EGMnow.com to see my work and the work of the rest of our staff.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.